Hi, welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on all the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day. In this episode, we're going to head out west to British Columbia and talk about valuation and property tax. Joining us are Paul Sullivan, a principal and regional leader for Ryan's property tax practice, and a returning guest to the podcast, and first-time guest Sandra Colley, also a principal and regional leader of Ryan's valuation practice. Now, before we get into the overall economic outlook for British Columbia and more generally, I guess, Canada and the potential impact on taxation, maybe, Sandra, we could start with you and you could tell us just a little bit more about Ryan's valuation practice.
Thanks, Jim. First of all, I'd like to introduce my practice. Ryan ULC Valuation is an appraisal practice currently focused in BC and expanding into Alberta this year. We do valuations for assets, financing, all sorts of property types, including industrial, retail, office, seniors. A lot of our focus is on as-ifs complete for construction financing, for new rental projects and condominium developments, land, which is extremely complicated, especially in the province of BC. We do automotive, mobile home parks, agricultural, gas stations. We're versant in lessee, lessor interests. On the legal side, we do expropriations. We do a lot of rental studies, arbitration. So we've got a team here of 30 appraisers that have or are working towards their AACI. And we're probably the largest commercial appraisal group in British Columbia. I think one of our key advantages that this team has is because we have really strong relationships with all the market participants in the market. So we have firsthand knowledge about deals that are going on, what players are thinking, what they're doing in the marketplace. And we try and build that into our valuations.
Very interesting. Now, you know, with that in mind, we've just seen a very scary jump in inflation. And of course, interest rates have been rising following that. Things maybe seem to have leveled off a little bit lately, but clearly those rates are a lot higher than what we've gotten used to. What's your take on the current economic outlook for BC and more generally Canada?
You know, listen to all of the industry leaders, both in BC and across Canada, and obviously talking to the players that are doing the deals on the ground, there's really four key issues that are impacting our economy this year. And three of them start with I. You've got your inflation, interest rates, immigration, and indirectly, they all affect a crisis in housing supply, and particularly affordable housing supply. Reflect to inflation. At the end of the day, it's really not about inflation. It's about the cost of bringing it down to about 2 to 2.5%. And interest rates will have to remain high to do this, and likely remain high until the fog clears, probably in 2024. It's important to remember that interest rates don't go down until the inflation rate is below the interest rate. And what we have to remember is that the supply chain issues, the war in Ukraine, and the changing demographics and demand account for about 40 to 50% of the inflationary costs. So if we get that under control, then your inflation goes down probably 30 basis points. What's another factor that has been very more recently is in China, when they just lifted their zero COVID policy. They have, I think, 30 million people a day are getting COVID. And so I think a lot of people have to stay home and they don't have the right vaccines. So that's going to throw another supplier chain wrench, I think, that might delay things in terms of getting interest rates and inflation under control. And interest rates have more of an impact on housing costs today because we have more debt. It's not a bad thing, but it's an adjustment. And I don't think we'll ever see interest rates going down to what they did before. But that's also why interest rates aren't going up through the roof like they did in the 1980s. Another thing to remember is productivity fights inflation. And baby boomers are retiring early. In this COVID-19 and new variant will continue to be felt in the workplace. So virtual and flexible environments add mobility for more highly educated workers, leaving lower wage workers in high demand. So wages will have to go up, and it'll force manufacturing companies to invest in new technologies. They haven't really done that in the last 10 to 15 years. So that's a good thing. Profits have been fairly easy over the last 10 years, and so they haven't invested in capital and technology. But I think it's going to be more critical today to be productive in the future. And there'll be more pain in the short term as companies were too debt intensified. And I think the last comment I'll make is on immigration. Like last year, the feds had 400,000 immigrants come into Canada. Some were already here, but the amount of construction workers that came in was zero. Sean Fraser announced that they were going to increase immigration to 500,000 people by 2025. It's fine to have immigration, but it's critical to get the right workers. It's not helpful at all if they're not trained construction workers, they're not healthcare workers, and all the supply of qualified people that we need in our country. And I just comment for context that the 400,000 to 500,000 immigrants is six times more than the U.S. are letting in currently. So I know, and Paul will talk to this in a few minutes, but the inflation and interest rates and immigration all contribute to perhaps the number one issue is supply of affordable housing. And the quality and affordability is not a moral or a social issue. It is an economic issue across Canada. There's a huge need for big investment in purpose-built rental. All level governments have to participate to break down these barriers. I don't think, and the biggest frustration we find here in BC is the municipal governments don't understand the costs and barriers they're creating to housing supply. You know, as Paul can attest to, over 30% of the housing costs are taxes and municipal fees. And I was talking to a client yesterday, and he's proposing to build just over 100 rental units in the Kitsilano area of Vancouver. And he's applied for a development permit, a rezoning application. He applied last year. He's not going to have a shovel in the ground till 2027, just going through all of the time and the fees and the cost. That's huge. And that adds to the cost. And that's why some clients are not now building a rental housing that they had on the books or converting to strata. So it's a real issue, both certainly in BC and I think across Canada.
Yeah, I mean, those are really good points, Sandra. I mean, there's a lot more going on here than just interest rates or mortgage rates that's causing inflation and affecting the economy as a whole. Paul, I'll bring you in now. I know Sandra talked about the impact of immigration, and I think I remember seeing you on a news program. I'm going to say it was Global News Vancouver or something like that. And you had made a very good point, is that these aggressive immigration targets are fine, but of course that leads to a need for more housing. We're already in a housing crisis, and now you're going to need more of it. And of course, with housing comes the municipal services. Does this mean we're definitely looking at some kind of property tax increase, or, you know, what are your thoughts just generally on the economic outlook?
Yeah, well, I mean, if we stick to immigration for a minute, I think it's one of the critical issues. You know, Sandra mentioned that we need to have skilled labor coming into the country. And to date, approximately 50% of our immigrants are either refugees or grandparents. And so less than half the people that are coming are skilled labor that we need. And that's why we're opening the borders, is to get to fill the jobs that we have. So what we don't have is a plan. And I was critical of the minister on not having a plan. And I can tell you what, that went viral globally about being critical on immigration, because people intrinsically think it's the right answer for Canada, but we must have a plan, and we don't. And so pressures in British Columbia, particularly around housing and housing affordability, it's the biggest issue in any election at any level of government. And I think British Columbia is probably the most interesting case sample of what not to do. And approximately 5 years ago, we elected an NDP left-leaning government. And in their first week of their mandate, they came out and said, we are going to crush the demand for housing. And they felt that if they could crush the demand, they would bring down prices. And so over the subsequent years, they and I'm talking about a very short period, like 3 to 5 years, they introduced speculation tax, they introduced empty home tax, additional school tax, foreign buyer tax, additional property transfer tax.
And yeah, I was going to say, Paul, how many taxes are you up to out there in British Columbia? I have trouble keeping track.
It makes your head spin. And now we have, as of January 1st this year, introduced a foreign buyer ban. Foreigners are no longer allowed to buy residential property in Canada. A lot of this is politics. It gets a lot of traction with folks that think that the problems are foreigners. They're not. Right now, approximately 1 to 1.5% of the buyers in our country are foreigners, and to ban them from the marketplace is nothing but politics. So that just simply doesn't work. You know, as Sandra noted, all these new taxes, they're being imposed on development land as well as on housing. In the past 5 years, we've gone from 24% of the cost of housing up to being taxes and charges from governments, up to over 30%. So you buy in your typical home in Vancouver is $1 million, $300,000 is going straight to government. It's very hypocritical of them to not look in the mirror and see that their policies have failed to produce affordable housing and in fact are driving up the price of housing. So it's a real irony that we're dealing with. Thankfully, we've had a pretty significant turn in government in the past year. They have realized that supply is truly the only answer. I think anybody that has any knowledge in real estate knows that interest rates are the only short-term factor that's going to change price, and they have and are going to continue to. But that's not solving the problem, because we have these immigration policies bringing in hundreds of thousands of new people. While they're getting their permanent residency, they're banned from buying a home, and we have less than 1% vacancy in rental. And as Sandra says, nobody can afford to build rental anymore because we have so much bureaucracy involved, it takes too long to build. So when I talk about 30% of housing costs being direct government taxes and charges, that doesn't even consider the holding costs of 5, 6, 7 years till you start to build these projects. If I put those numbers in, we'd be going way up on that. So the problem is supply. Government is coming around to that. And it'll be interesting to see in the next 12 to 18 months what we can do to turn the corner there.
So in its attempt to sort of help the housing situation, it's actually kind of worked in the opposite. We've got to increase the cost, and we've created more delays to actually get the development done. So it sounds like maybe not a passing grade as far as how the government's handled the crisis. Is that fair to say?
Well, absolutely. You know, it's always government. Government seems to react to the politically attractive approach, and that's to blame somebody. And that's what all these taxes are about. It's the blame game. You know, I was doing a radio show recently with the minister, and I said, so tell me about your incentive programs to get housing built. What have you come up with lately? And they're dead in the tracks. They don't have it. And, you know, we have our universities, which are producing all of this left-wing taxation policy, thinking they're going to solve the housing process. I'm saying, why haven't you put your efforts into these programs that should stimulate housing growth? And they just haven't. So we need to change the dialogue and the approach to housing. And it's not about crushing demand. It's just completely failed. And I guess I just have one more comment, Jim, because it was something I said on the radio the other day is, what do you think of this foreign buyer ban? Is it going to work? Well, we just went through 2.5 years of COVID where not a single foreigner came to this country because of COVID. And the prices went up more in those 2 years than they ever have in history. So to tell me a foreign buyer ban is a good solution to housing price is outrageous, and it's nothing but politics.
Yeah, it is interesting when you look at how low the percentage of foreign buyers is, how you would really expect that to have a big impact on the situation. We've talked a lot about the housing situation and the economic outlook as far as that goes. But I guess it's important to realize those economic factors, they have a different impact on different types of market, right? Like I would think the outlook for office space right now is a lot different than it is for, say, a residential development. Any comments on that or any examples of how a different, more specific market might be impacted by the current economic situation, Sandra or Paul?
Yeah, I can probably jump in and start on that one. In the office market, Vancouver has done extremely well relative to the rest of North America. There are more people coming back to work here, and I think that's a little bit of a function of a younger group that live and work in Vancouver, and we have probably a higher percentage of newer buildings. For example, New York has, I think, over 400 million square feet of office, but the average age is 75 years old, and it's very difficult to convert those. So they're struggling, and I think it's also contributed to the hassle of living and commuting out in the suburban area. So I think that's why I think Vancouver will do quite well. The nuance of the office market today is it's not really black and white. It's the market's seeking built out space. It's so expensive to build your TIs. It used to be $40, $50 a square foot. It's now over $200. Getting permits used to be 2 to 3 months. It's now 6 to 9 months. And if you can find trades, it's another 6 to 9 months after that to build out. So you have to be a year and a half ahead if you're going to expand or contract. Across Canada, some are downsizing. Some tenants are increasing. Some rolling to more flex space. But the pressure on landlords today is more to create an experience-driven environment. I think there'll always be some hybrid, hoping people to come back 5 days a week with flexibility or at least 3 days. So it's becoming a cultural thing, the office market. It's not necessarily about cost. It's to enable, the real estate should enable business objectives and culture. So as a result, the office landlords are going to have to react about change and agility and listen to an employer's going to have to listen more to a bottoms up approach on what their employees are looking for. And I think your B and C buildings across Canada and probably across North America are going to come to an inflection point because we try and build that into our valuations. That's the office market. I don't know if Paul wants to chat a little bit more about the office market. There's a couple other markets I've always been asked about, which I can chat about in a few minutes.
I'd just add one comment on the office market, Jim. One of the interesting elements of our immigration policies, we allow the type of workers into Canada that a lot of the large American firms need to succeed. And we're seeing a lot of our office space taken up by major U.S. organizations who are hiring these people that are being let into Canada, and that helped to buoy our office market.
Good point. Sandra, you wanted to comment on another type of market?
Yeah, just briefly. I mean, the industrial market is and multifamily are probably the two strongest asset classes to have, to hold, and will be for the next couple of years. In the industrial market, you're not making any more land. And you have to remember that rent is just a fraction of the operating cost to move around. So our rents in the industrial market 6-7 years ago were $6 to $7 a foot. Their new space is now well over $20 a square foot. In Toronto, it's a little bit lower, $3 or $4 a square foot lower, I believe, but it increased 43% year over year in the past from 2021 to the end of 2022. There's a slight pullback on investment. Capital on all asset types is just sitting on the sidelines right now. You know, cap rates have gone up, yield rates have gone up, but we just don't know how much necessarily. But I would say at least 50 to 75 basis points, given where interest rates are today. In the multifamily market, we've probably talked a lot about that. It really comes down to supply in to get product built. We got to streamline approvals. We got to relax zoning regulations. As Paul mentioned, we have to incentivize people to build rental, like get 30, 40% more density at no cost if you create an amenity or you provide affordability. The challenge is people are charging for the extra density, and it's just killing the ability to build rental. And as a result, we just don't have any supply. So rents have gone up 40, 50% over the last year and a half, which has not helped affordability as well. And construction costs to build a concrete building in Vancouver is well over $400 a square foot. We've got to cut these development fees, maybe even bring back MERBs. So policy change is critical, or we're just going to be even in a worse mess. But I will say that in Canada, 33% of people that live in housing are renters, but I do see this trend is reversing. But we've got to get all governments to really get involved and get some of the costs and our barriers to build down.
Great insights there, Sandra. Paul, I wanted to, you already started talking a little bit about the tax situation in British Columbia, but I wanted to ask you about one solution that was getting debated, and that's a home equity tax. And I think I heard you on the Mike Smith Show podcast. I think that's from CKNW 980 in Vancouver. You were sort of debating the merits of a home equity tax. And I guess my take is that you think there's got to be a better way than levying this new tax. But would you like to comment on that a little bit? Like, first of all, what is it they're considering? And why do you think it's not a good idea?
So these academics are proposing a 1% tax on any property over $1 million. So $10,000 per year for the average homeowner.
I thought all houses in Vancouver are over $1 million.
Pretty much there. You know, you get some condos that the small ones that are below that level, but the average in Vancouver is about $1 million. And frankly, you know, if they bring this in, we'll finally get a reaction from the electorate, because it's going to affect so many of them that we'll start to crush the support for this type of ideology. To suggest that somebody that just bought a $1 million home can afford an extra $10,000 a year is ludicrous. It is very difficult just to live in Vancouver because of the price of housing and everything else. And then to add this would frankly make it impossible for a lot of new home buyers to live in Vancouver. So they say, the academics, that you folks that own homes won the lottery because they've gone up in value so much, and you need to give a little back to the tune of 1% a year. And we're going to take this money and build affordable housing with it. Well, governments don't build housing. Developers build housing. And 87% of the new jobs in British Columbia have been government jobs. And those guys aren't building houses. So I resent the concept that we should keep taxing homeowners to create revenue under the guise that we're going to use it to build housing, because it's just not happening. This government has already doubled the property taxes on homes over $3 million, which is not a fairly modest home in Vancouver. And property taxes on homes are tens of thousands of dollars, $50,000, $100,000 per year. And this is being achieved through the political ideology of it's time to give a little back. Well, here's the thing, Jim. These homeowners that are paying these $50,000 a year property tax bills have seen the value of their properties wiped out by 20, 30% in the past 12 months.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you bought at the peak, I mean, you're already down. And if that's highly leveraged, you know, you don't want another $10,000 home equity tax bill or whatever. You know, that's going to be tough.
That's right. And you've lost millions of dollars. Potentially, you're upside down on your equity requirement on your mortgage. And somebody's coming along here and saying, hey, you should pay an extra $3,000 to $5,000 a month in after-tax money because you won the lottery. Well, it's sure not going to feel like that. And people don't have that type of money. So what they do is, in British Columbia, you can defer your property taxes. You can take it as a charge against title. And I looked about a year ago, and the value of the deferred property tax in British Columbia went from about $800 million to $1.6 billion in a single year. So as this government keeps adding costs to homeowners, they are sinking them into debt. And I just don't think that's the Canadian value. I don't think that anybody that really understands this issue would support this kind of taxation.
Yeah, I think it's maybe somewhat ironic, but kind of interesting that, you know, three people from Ryan can all agree that the answer is not always to levy a new tax on something. Good point there, Paul. While we're on the subject of taxes, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the upcoming property tax deadline in British Columbia. I believe the deadline for first level of appeal is coming up soon, isn't it? The end of January?
Yeah, January 31st is our appeal deadline. You must have your appeals registered by midnight. I'll just make a couple of notes. You can appeal based on market value or equity. Equity is comparable assessments. In British Columbia, you get the lesser of. The valuation date is July 1st of the prior year. And the physical condition date is October 31st. Just a note of caution, don't blindly appeal your assessments in BC. We have 9 different classifications for taxation. And if you appeal something that's incorrect, the assessor will change it and could cause your taxes to go up. So you do need to put some consideration into what you appeal and make sure there's no risk.
And what happens if you miss that deadline?
You're out of luck. There is just about no chance that you can solve your problem until the following year. Now, the one thing about British Columbia is it is an annual assessment roll. So every year you can go back and it's a new valuation date of July 1st each year. So it's too bad, but it's not the end of the world.
Okay, so the valuation date will be basically July 1 of last year. Is that correct?
July 1, 2022 or 2023 taxation.
Okay, so that maybe leaves just over 2 weeks or something like 2 weeks before the deadline. What should somebody do if they realize they haven't given this a good look yet?
Well, I mean, that's our core service here is send it to us. We're going to do a review of your assessment. Make sure you're not at risk. We write a short report and you have that in front of you prior to the appeal deadline. And if our recommendation is to appeal, we automatically do that for you.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. That's great information. I think we have time for one more topic I definitely wanted to get to. You two are sort of the perfect guests to talk about it. But I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there about valuation and property tax. So maybe can you just talk about that a little bit? Like, I think some people get the two confused and they think property tax bills are just directly related to the value of a particular property. Maybe talk about the difference between the two.
Yeah, it's funny, Jim, because often when a property sells at a much higher price to assessment or even at a similar price to assessment, it provides the best evidence to reduce an assessment. And the critical reason for that is the difference in the terms of reference between assessed value and appraisal or mortgage finance or acquisition or whatever. In appraisal, in the marketplace, you're valuing the covenant of the tenants in place. You're valuing the terms of the lease. You're taking a present value of the contractual cash flow associated with an asset. That is called the leased fee interest. Let's say I have a bank with an above market rent. I am going to pay a premium for both those reasons on that asset. Now, let's go to assessment. I am a box right next door to that bank. I have a lower rent and I have no covenant. That is something that will be far more reflective of market value. And it's market value in the fee simple interest. And so what the fee simple interest means is there's no contract rent in place. It's what is the market rent as of July 1st for that premises? And what is the rate of return or cap rate one would apply with no influence for covenant? It's not a bank, it's your average retail. So when you calculate, you can literally calculate the cash flow difference between market rent and contract rent, discount it to the end of the lease, take that off the purchase price, and there's what my assessment ought to be. So we very quickly can calculate differences between sale price and what one would get appraisal for and what one ought to be assessed at. So what you need to appreciate is taxation is based upon ad valorem. Ad valorem means we distribute taxes based upon market value. And it would be unfair to distribute taxes to a certain type of covenant or property or cash flow for a property right beside another and have somebody pay that much more taxes. We normalize that to fair market value in the fee simple interest. Private agreements don't count. So I'll leave it at that on income properties. And then on land and other types of situations, we have this concept of equity. If I buy a property for $500 a square foot and everybody's assessed at $300 a square foot, I will appeal if I don't get my assessment at $300 a square foot. You get the lesser of market value or equity. And that's law in British Columbia. So an appraiser will most often shoot for that $500 a foot. Their clients are getting construction financing. They need to prove up the highest value possible in the marketplace. But if the assessor is not willing to go to that threshold or highest level of value, they can't go there with you just because you paid that price. And that's the principle of equity. So these two things are probably the fundamental differences between appraisal and values for taxation.
Appraisal puts, you know, value on is the effective date of value usually, and it's not tied to the July rate. And we bring in a lot of the nuances in terms of, configuration or what you can build. And there's so many factors that we build into valuation that don't come into play necessarily with assessments. So the wonderful thing about what we have here in BC is we've got appraisers that are on the ground daily in all market sectors. And so when Paul's team does the tax reviews and the pre-roll and everything, he's on top of the market. He knows exactly all the deals are going and all the nuances in the market. That often creates opportunity to see where some appeals are necessary.
Yeah, that's great information. Certainly, it's not as simple as a lot of people think. And you two are the experts. Sandra, Paul, thank you for your time today and all the great insights.
You're welcome. Pleasure.
You're very welcome.
That concludes this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. For more information on Ryan's property tax and valuation services, check out our website at www.ryan.com/Canada. And please let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your questions, comments, or suggestions to events@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.